Welcome to PCMC. I'm Mike Buongiorno. I'm joined once again by Anthony Buongiorno.
Hi, everybody.
How are you?
I'm great.
Fantastic. What are we gonna talk about today?
We're gonna talk about one of my favorite topics.
What is this?
Bravo TV.
Bravo. What was their catchphrase?
Their catchphrase was "Watch what happens."
Watch what happens.
And another one was "Only by Bravo."
Right. Now, I don't know a lot about this topic. You're really showing.
I'm like the shaman here. Yeah.
Right. I remember in its origins, like when it was first branded, its branding was like high society. That's why it was called Bravo. It was like, we're gonna show you operas.
Yes.
And we're gonna show inside the actor's studio.
Yes. So I have some.
And now it's not that at all.
I have some facts here that I wanted to start off with. But yes, you're absolutely right. So Bravo started in the, I believe, I should probably know this as the person who's like leading the way on this.
That's right. No one comes here for facts.
Sometime in the 80s or 90s.
Right.
And it was, you're right, it was Bravo. It was like a station dedicated to the arts, the fine arts. Yes. So it was like opera and you know, like art installations and book reviews and shit like that.
It's so, a basic cable channel. It's a basic cable channel. But its branding was like high-minded.
Yes. And one of the holdovers from that genre, from that period rather, is inside the actor's studio,
right,
which was like a big hit on Bravo before Bravo became what it is now.
Is it still around?
I think it is. I don't know if it's still on Bravo, but it was.
Right. Forever.
There was overlap between Bravo's rebrand and inside the actor's studio.
Right.
So it was very like highbrow, like this is the arts and entertainment.
And people were like, this is boring.
Channel. Yeah, for real. People. Well,
like a lot of basic.
Like TLC was the learning channel, and now it's like, all reality
bored.
Shows.
Right.
Yeah. Eventually, I'm bored. I don't want to learn. Boo. Right. Put rides in Epcot.
Right.
Yeah. So Bravo was rebranded in the early 2000s. Mm-hmm. So like 2002, 2003. And one of the early stars of Bravo was the rebrand was Kathy Griffin.
Yes.
So a lot of, and now she has been mistreated and beaten down.
Absolutely.
Horribly. Justice for Kathy. And
yes.
Kathy Griffin maintains that Bravo was partially built on her back and then taken from her.
I would agree.
Because she started doing comedy specials exclusively for Bravo.
Yes, she did.
And she got Bravo their first Emmy.
Yes.
Because she did. They then gave her a reality show, My Life on the D-List.
Which was great.
Great. I have it on DVD. One of the greatest reality shows ever, I think.
Yeah.
Because it was really like real. And it was an Emmy-winning Bravo show.
Yeah.
And it helped usher in the Bravo reality period.
Right. Was there really any reality before her on Bravo?
I'm sure that there was, but I know like she was the earliest, and then the next big hit after her was Project Runway.
Right.
Which was the fashion show. So it kind of still like in the beginning stayed to its roots as like being about arts and entertainment.
Right.
But then that changed with The Real Housewives.
Right.
But it started that way. It kind of stayed that way.
Right. And Kathy Griffin was and is known for having a largely gay audience.
Yes.
So that's also part of the change of like the who watches Bravo.
Yes. She's also known for having, I think she's the comedian with the most hour-long specials ever.
Yeah, right.
In history. And that's because of Bravo giving her so many.
But, you know, when people talk about contemporary comedy, she's almost never in the conversation. She's never on the list.
Which is so upsetting.
Right. And I know that she does her own thing and did her own thing and she didn't do HBO specials and stuff. But it's, to me, it's like totally ridiculous that she's so overlooked.
Well, you and I have been fans of her since the early 2000s. And right. we saw her before Live. She was big. She was big because she was on Suddenly Susan. But before she was big, when she went back to stand up after Suddenly Susan.
Yeah. And it was one of the best.
And it was amazing.
Stand-up shows I've ever seen. And I saw like George Carlin.
Right. Like, and I remember one of her jokes was, because we live in Staten Island, she was like, Staten Island, here are all the gays, there goes the neighborhood.
Yeah. I remember thinking like, this is such a huge room, but she's making it feel like a little club.
Because she doesn't have a set. She never has a set.
Right, which is like, you could count on one hand how many comedians have done that. Like Lenny Bruce, Robin Williams, her.
Right.
She has a Todd Barry, maybe. Like, yeah. She didn't write jokes.
No.
She just went out there.
Yeah. She has her processes, and she's back to doing stand up now. She had to stop because people accused her of trying to kill the president.
Oh, my God.
But she's back to doing stand up now, and her process still is the same. She has her comedy notebook, which is just a marble notebook where she writes down, like, I think I'll talk about this.
Right,
and it'll literally be like a word.
Right.
And it'll be like, I want to talk about what Gwyneth Paltrow said yesterday.
Right.
And that's it. And then she'll go up there and just talk.
Right. And she
does a lot of things.
Things do repeat. But
right.
She...
But like some stories will repeat. But she does a lot of like, ooh, let me tell you this. This is between you and me. This doesn't leave this room.
Right.
Where like she is like the gossip.
Right. Right. It
like
feels
you feel
like
you're having a conversation with her.
Right. And she's an incredible comedian. And
I don't think she'll be fully appreciated until she's either really old or dies.
It's so sad.
And she just got diagnosed with cancer, lung cancer, which is really sad. She never smoked.
And a year ago, she attempted to take her own life.
Yeah. And she's also somebody I used to follow her career really closely. I want to get back into her because I feel bad. I feel like I jumped ship, even though I didn't, but it's just because she fell out. I stopped paying attention. She was somebody who never drank and never did drugs. And then she ended up getting addicted
to pills
after the whole thing with Trump.
Right.
Her life really derailed.
Right. If you don't remember, she took a stupid picture of like a Trump mask, like had like ketchup on it, like it was bloody. And people treated it like she tried to shoot the president.
Yeah.
Even liberal people turned against her. Everyone was like, this is too far. Trump,
it's just not funny.
She got put on no-fly list like she was a terrorist.
Yeah.
She wasn't just canceled. The president of the United States went against her and everyone turned against her, and even so-called comedians. And this is what pisses me off, because it's like every comedian will suck the dick of the ghost of Lenny Bruce and be like, Lenny Bruce, he was so fucking brave. And it's like, well, she's the modern Lenny Bruce, and who defended her?
Right.
Really, I don't remember anyone fucking defending her.
No, everybody turned their back on
her. Her only person that really ever had her back was Joan Rivers, and then Joan Rivers died.
Right. And then she did a press conference, which a lot of people now say was a mistake.
Yeah.
Where she came out and she cried and said, the president is trying to break me.
Yeah.
I need help. And then everybody was like, now she wants our sympathy.
Right.
It was horrible.
Yeah. But I don't know what she could have done. And you said before, you said off the air that the photographer got completely away with it.
Yeah, and it was the photographer's concept. And he was like, he's a photographer, and he has these concepts that he does. He's worked with her before. And he was like, basically like, oh, this is a crazy idea. Kathy will do it. And she's the one who got the brunt of
My only conspiracy theory is that because she was such like a gossip kind of person, that maybe people in the industry did have their knives out for her already and took this as an opportunity to banish her.
It could be, although I will say that her, like any other comedian, her stuff evolved over the years. So like by the time that happened, she was really much more of a political comic than a celebrity gossip comic.
Right, that's true.
So I don't know. She kind of changed in the way like Jeanine Garofalo changed, and you know, a lot of comics do.
But she's dealt with the things that every woman in the limelight have dealt with. Like people make fun of her appearance. People make fun of, she's had plastic surgery, which she calls her dental work.
Yeah.
She's
one of the only comedians who had the balls to go perform in Iraq.
Right.
For
she
the
did
troops.
A lot of USO shows.
She did. She performed for prisoners.
Yeah. She's great. And everyone turned their back on her.
Yeah.
Including like her so-called friends, like fucking Anderson Cooper.
Anderson Cooper really sold her out hard.
I know. And he makes me so angry. You fucking Vanderbilt. You fucking
you
rich
say that with
Vanderbilt.
Such disdain.
Because he's not a man of the people. He's a Vanderbilt. He's a rich. Anyway.
And he's very, so this is how this all ties into Bravo, is that she was friends with Andy Cohen. Anderson Cooper is really good friends with Andy Cohen. Andy Cohen is the head of programming at Bravo. He's also the face of Bravo. He replaced Kathy Griffin on the CNN New Year's Eve thing. And this is, I like Andy Cohen, but there are some things that I have problems with him about. And this is one of them.
Right.
Somebody asked him, like a reporter, paparazzi, somebody came up to him on the street and they were like, when the whole Kathy Griffin thing happened. And they were like, what do you think about Kathy? What happened to Kathy Griffin? And he goes, who?
Fuck you.
And then Kathy Griffin was like, I fucking put your network on the map.
Right.
Like, how dare you?
Right.
You turn your back on me and take my job and just like totally destroy me. So anyway, that's my, I have an issue with him. And she also she said other damning things about him, that like he's not as nice of a guy as he seems on TV. And
he doesn't seem nice to me, to be honest with you.
She also says basically like he's a gay man, so he gets a free pass by a lot of people. But basically she says he's a man who's built his empire on the backs of women because of the housewives.
Yes. Yes.
Which is what they are, what brings in the money to Bravo.
Right. So do you want to talk about the housewives? So
let me continue anyway, because we got on a kind of, we got off on a rant, but so just some interesting things about Bravo, and then we'll just talk about like some of the shows and what you've watched and what you haven't watched. Oh, another early hit was Queer Eye for the Straight Guy.
Yes. Yes.
So for a while there, the big hits
Jen
were.
Jen was such a huge, she has.
Before the new, now the new Queer Eye is like.
Right.
Way different in tone.
Jen has like autographs on her wall of all the Queer
Eyes. The original
guys.
Queer Eyes?
She like was so obsessed with Queer Eye.
Yeah, it was Queer Eye, Kathy Griffin, Project Runway, and then Top Chef. Those were the big ones.
Yeah.
So anyway, just some quotes. The reason why I want to talk about Bravo is I think it's something that's just a huge touchstone, and we haven't talked about it on the show, and for a pop culture show, we should talk about it.
Yeah.
And also, I just think Bravo's so interesting because it's a really good example of extreme branding.
Yeah.
Because Bravo is a network with fans.
Yeah.
Like, people will turn on, people that I know, myself included, like, we'll just turn on Bravo, no matter what's on, we'll watch it.
Right. It's Bravo.
It's
right.
Bravo. It's like, it really is like the old, like, it's not TV, it's HBO. Yeah. It's like Bravo has a core audience and a core, like, aesthetic that they nail, and they do really, really well, and it's become like extremely
they know
huge.
Who their audience is, and they address their audience.
Yes. So a couple of things I just think are interesting. So Entertainment Weekly put Bravo reality shows on the best of the decade list for the 2010s.
Okay.
And they said that Bravo is very addictive because it's high culture and low scruples, which I think is an interesting way of putting it.
Interesting.
Which basically means like it's like highfalutin, but it's also like trashy.
Right.
Just some interesting thing. A study released in May 2008 ranked Bravo as the most recognizable brand among gay consumers.
Interesting.
It's the top, as of 2017, it was the top cable channel for women, which is funny because you have Lifestyle and OWN, which are specifically targeted to women, but Bravo is actually the top cable channel for women. Andy Cohen, I don't know if this is true and what this is based on, but Andy Cohen was quoted in 2009 saying that they have the most educated audience in all of cable, which I find really interesting because I know so many people with like PhDs who watch Bravo and are obsessed with it.
Well, it reminds me of like Susan Sontag's Notes on Camp. Like, it's smart but dumb at the same time.
Yes.
It's smart people understanding dumb thing. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's that double thing there.
Yes, absolutely. Just some interest. These are in no order. I put, speaking of what we just said, it's now been the subject of numerous academic papers. A lot of people who are really super smart, like, are doing like work with it critically.
Mm-hmm.
But interestingly, it was apolitical for a while.
Hmm.
The audience trended up throughout the 2010s. It hit its peak. Guess when it started trending down?
I don't know.
The 2016 election. It hit its peak in 2016. And then started losing.
Really?
Yes, because Andy Cohen was very pro-Hillary. And a lot of people who had been fans and Bravo watchers who voted for Trump felt that they weren't welcome anymore and stopped watching.
So the audience
has been trending down since the 2016 election.
See, in my prejudice, I would not imagine a Trump voter as someone who liked Bravo.
There were. I would suspect it was a lot of white women, if you just look at the demographics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Who voted for Trump.
Right.
Twice.
Right, right, right.
As a demographic. Okay, so then I have two quotes that I want to talk about. I'm very excited about this. Oh, BravoCon is a thing now.
Really?
Yes. So there's only been one because of COVID. It's supposed to be a yearly thing. It was supposed to come back this year, and I was going to go, but I couldn't because they canceled for COVID. So far, there's only been one. It was BravoCon 2019, which was demanded by the fans.
Demanded.
Over 10,000 people went, and it was sold out immediately.
Wow.
It sold out within minutes. And some people were selling tickets like on StubHub and stuff for like thousands and thousands of dollars.
It's funny because what other brand is like that. I mean, there are other brands like that.
It's like the Oprah brand.
Right. But that's the only thing that I think of that's similar.
Yeah.
It's based on a network or a basic cable network. But right, like Comic-Con is like, the brand is a whole genre.
Right.
Like this is like, it's become a brand.
Specific channel. And I think part of it is that the chat, like Bravo's so smart. And I guess this is Andy Cohen, really, to give him credit. They're smart in that they know who their audience is. And like you said, they specifically play with their audience. And like he has a late night show, Watch What Happens Live, every night at 11 p.m. and or 11:30 now, I think. And every night it is a recap of what happened on Bravo that night.
So it's all about talking and gossiping, so tonight,
and he does this fun thing. He was inspired by like chat shows of from the 70s where like people played games and did fun stuff and silly stuff. He does this thing of he'll have one Bravo celebrity and a real celebrity. And a lot of times it's a real celebrity who's a Bravo fan.
Sure.
Like Elizabeth Moss is a huge Bravo fan.
Yeah.
There are a few. He's had Meryl Streep on.
Wow.
But what's interesting is like he'll have them on with like a Real Housewife and he'll be like, okay, so tonight New York was on, Real Housewives of New York. Tonight on Watch What Happens Live, one of the Real Housewives of New York will be interviewed alongside Tiffany Amber Thiessen,
who's
a fan. And they'll talk, the celebrity will get to ask the Bravo celebrity questions, the audience will call in and ask questions, and it's like, wow, can you believe this happened tonight? And it's like an instant recap of what just happened.
Wow.
It's very, they also know their audience in that they make moments. The editors are brilliant. They make moments that are very memeable and very gif-able.
Yeah.
So those are everywhere. And so that's BravoCon. There's been over 60 books written by Real Housewives.
Wow.
Which is really the, Real Housewives are the flagship of the whole thing. Right. Over 40 songs recorded by Bravo celebrities.
Okay.
There have been 11 Housewives series just in America. And then there are Housewives of other countries too.
Okay.
And then I have two quotes from two feminist theorists.
Okay.
One critical of them and one in support of them.
Okay.
So I'll start with the one that's critical and then we'll just debrief on all this.
Okay.
So Gloria Steinem is a Bravo critic.
Okay.
She wrote in an essay, it is women, about the Real Housewives specifically, it is women all dressed up and inflated and plastic surgeried and false bosomed. It's a minstrel show for women. Okay. So that's Gloria Steinem's take. Roxane Gay is a big Bravo fan.
Sure.
And goes on like Bravo podcasts and stuff. She wrote Bad Feminist.
Yeah.
She wrote, I think the Real Housewives franchises allow women to be their truest selves. We see the mess. We see their amazing friendships and everything in between. When women are allowed to be their fullest selves, that's the most feminist thing we can do.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So anyway.
Wow.
So let's, I guess that's all. I front loaded all of that. And I guess we could just talk about. So where do you fall? Let's start with the feminist thing.
Sure.
What do you think about like the Real Housewives as being yay women or versus damaging to women?
Huh.
I know you're not super familiar, but I think that both sides have interesting points.
I've watched handfuls of episodes and stuff. You know, in general, Gloria Steinem she's put her foot in her mouth a lot lately. And I believe she's beginning to show her age, not in her literal age, but in that her sort of second wave feminism thinking isn't matching up with the world we live in anymore. You know, this idea of, you know, you could see in the quote you just read of like, we have to like
judging
create
women by being having plastic surgery and
create
stuff like
role
that.
Models. So it's not about, you know, it's about positive representation rather than accurate representation,
right.
or, you know, it, Gloria Steinem.
Well, that's
I think
what Roxane Gay is like, they're drunk messes, but that's who they are.
Right. And Roxane Gay is much, you know, much more hip
current
now and current.
Well, that even came. A lot of people criticized her in the 2016 campaign,
right? Because she said that stupid thing about
she was very much like Hillary Clinton needs to be president because she's a woman and we need a woman president. Even though there are lots of progressives who are saying, well, actually, Bernie Sanders' policies are more pro-woman than Hillary's are.
Right? She said that stupid thing, and I'm paraphrasing, where she was like, women only want to vote for Bernie to impress their boyfriends. Remember she said something terrible?
Yes, yes.
And people were like, you know who used to would be really mad at that?
You
in the past.
In the past, yeah.
Yeah.
It's that could be her showing her age and just not, it's second wave and now we're on to third wave. I mean.
Or more.
Yeah. Second wave feminism was all about women in the workplace and women need to be everywhere men are and.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Which is still true, but also now there's much more of a focus on like intersectionality and, you know, stuff like that.
Well, I guess when it comes to The Real Housewives, the my thing, my framing of it, whenever I thought about it or think about it, has always been the way that I've always thought about reality shows, which is about their constructed nature. Like, I can't help but watch any reality show and look at the framing, think of where the lights are, think of why the camera's where it is. I can't help but find the artifice. And
yes, but once you but once you get past that, it's so fun.
Okay, that's fine, but
it's like wrestling.
Doesn't that have an effect on what these women are talking about in terms of good representation, bad representation?
Well,
because the housewives can't be who we see on the show.
No, and well, the thing too is like anything else, it started as one thing and it's something else. It originally started as The Real Housewives of Orange County, which was a cheap ripoff of Desperate Housewives.
Right.
So it was, let's do a the reality show. These are the right. Real Housewives.
Right.
And originally it was just supposed to be called The Real Housewives, and it was a knockoff of Desperate Housewives.
Right.
One of the, Andy Cohen says it wasn't his idea. Somebody else said, why don't we put of Orange County on it in case we want to franchise this? And he said, oh, that's too long.
Yeah.
And he's like, you know, she was right, because we ended up franchising right. it. But originally it was much more in the style of like the early Real World. It was much yeah. more about them as mothers. It was much more like they weren't all glammed up.
Yeah.
That's changed. I mean, now it's much more campy, and there's much more money that goes into it. And
yeah.
they kind of like come on now knowing that they're going to be a housewife. So like there's,
right.
they know they're filling
gonna,
a role. Like,
they're going to make a record or write a book.
They're going to write a book. They're going to do a record. They're going to wear certain designer clothes or whatever. Like it's changed. But
yeah.
There are real smart people who like follow, who watch this, and they'll say, like, as a smart viewer knows that it's artifice. It's like wrestling.
Right, right, right,
you
right.
You know it, but you just are like, but it's fun anyway.
Right.
And what it's gotten a lot of credit for is the fact that most housewives are well north of 40. Mm-hmm. And it's like people have said, like, it's the only place where like older women who can be like adults. Themselves. Yeah.
Yeah.
And now on like the Real Housewives of every Housewives franchise has its shtick, like what makes it.
Yeah.
And like the Housewives of Beverly Hills is all like they were former actresses. So now like real established actresses have been on it. Like Denise Richards is a Real Housewife of Beverly Hills. Right. Lisa Rinna, the Richards sisters who are Paris Hilton's aunt. Now Kathy Hilton, Paris Hilton's mother, is a Real Housewife of Beverly Hills. So like that's their thing. And then there's like the Real Housewives of Jersey, which is like their whole thing is like they're all like Italian and they're all related to each other somehow.
Right, they're all
like sisters-in-law and stuff. So like they all have their thing, which makes them interesting. But you know, it certainly changed, and you can certainly see the artifice. And sometimes it's so ridiculous where it's like two characters, it's like two women will have a chat behind like closed doors, and then like one will say what the other one said, and she'll be like, "You." That was between me and you. It's like, and the millions of people watching because you're on TV. But like, you just, it's like wrestling. Like I said, like you just don't care about that.
My question is, how does that problematize the feminist idea of it?
Well, in a way, that kind of does give credence to Gloria Steinem's point, where she says it's like a minstrel show for women. Like it's women coming on being bad women.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right? So it's like they come on and they feel like they have to play this role of like, this older, but like the perception is like older, but hang on to their youth kind of vain sort of like drunk older woman trope.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And like in a way, I guess that does make sense, because I do think that there are some housewives who come on and they say like, if I want to be a good housewife and I want to be kept, because if they're not good, they fire them from season to season.
You can't be boring.
I got to be good. I can't be boring. I got to bring the drama. I got to start a fight with somebody. You know, and that's the whole thing. What's interesting about Bravo, and one of my friends, what's funny about Bravo people is they find each other really quickly.
Sure.
And like, I just started a new job and we did personality slides and I put like a Real Housewives logo on my slide. And afterwards, like three people came up to me and they were like, you watch Housewives. So what do you think about Erica right now? Like what's going on? And what's funny is we are all snobs.
Sure.
Because we view Bravo as being top tier reality. And like this woman that I work with put it really funnily. She was like, somebody asked me if I watched something on TLC, and I said, excuse me, I watch trash, not garbage. Which is, it's true. It's like, there's something about Bravo shows. They have a quality to them that like other reality shows don't have.
Right. Well, it goes into that intellectual thing too. Like, I can't count myself among them, but more and more now you're seeing very educated people like professional wrestling in a similar way, where you think, oh, you know, you used to think of the wrestling audience as whatever, naive or uneducated, and now you've got like people with PhDs who are like, no, wrestling is great.
It's performative, right, for sure.
Right, right, right. So it's okay.
I'm curious as an outsider.
I have a question for you.
No, you
can ask me a question.
All right, I'm gonna ask you a question because you're an outsider. I'm like the person who knows about this and you don't. So like, what do you know us know that people are fans of it.
Yeah,
you're not.
Yeah.
So what do you think of that? Like, what's your like impression of people who like watch these shows? Are you like, oh, because I feel like the impression that a lot of people have is like, oh, they watch these dumb shows, like they're so stupid.
Yeah, I don't have that feeling. I don't have that feeling. I simply think it's something that I don't. It's just something I don't have access to.
It's also not your target. You're not the target demo.
Right, and I don't think, going back to what I was saying before, I don't think that fans are dumb and don't realize it's reality. I know that you Real Housewives fans know what I know, the constructed nature of it. So it's just something I feel like it's just not in my wheelhouse.
Okay.
My question for you is, when you watch like a Housewives show, do you love them or do you hate them and love to hate them? Is it like, oh, I fucking hate her? Or, you know, like what is your feeling towards them?
That's a really good question. There have been hundreds of them at this point. Uh-huh. So it depends on the person. There are some that I really love and I'm like, I love you. Like one of my favorites, and I know a lot of people don't like her, but one of my favorites of all time was Carol Radziwill. She was one of the Real Housewives of New York. She was on for like 5 seasons. I liked her because she was actually smart. She used to be an ABC journalist. She wrote books prior mm-hmm. to being on the show. Like she was an actual writer. People used to say that she was like a Carrie Bradshaw type.
Uh-huh.
She came on, and part of the reason she came on was because she was friends with Andy Cohen, and he was like, we need somebody more introspective and kind of intelligent. It'll like shake up the cast.
Uh-huh.
She was also married to a Kennedy, so she's like, she's married into the Kennedy family.
Uh-huh.
So I really liked her, like loved her, because I thought that she was like really, really smart. When she's one of the ones who brought politics onto the show for the first time, because during 2016, like her storyline was she was campaigning for Hillary Clinton.
Yeah.
And it was like nobody had ever seen that on the Housewives shows before. Like somebody who's actually like being political openly.
Right.
She ended up leaving. You know, people turned on her because she got into a fight with Bethany Frankel, who was another big name who they were really close and they had a falling out, whatever. So like she's somebody that I loved. Then there are other ones that like I hate, but it's like I know that they're good for the show, but I hate them as people.
Okay.
You know, where it's like she's a monster. Right. She's horrible, but like she's just so watchable that I love her. And then there are others, like I feel like a lot of Bravo fans like who watch Housewives are like, oh, I don't like this one because she's just a dud. She brings us nothing. She should be fired. So there's like 3 categories.
I see.
And it's like, if you're boring, which, then it's like,
so funny because
then it's like, we don't like you because we don't like, because you're not, you might be a good person, but like, you're just boring.
It's funny as you say this, because this is the same way wrestling fans feel about wrestlers. It's the same categories. Yeah. I either really like you or I hate like
you. And it's all about alliances and then feuds.
Right.
That's what it's all about.
Right. Huh. So you mentioned Bethany Frankel.
Yes.
Like, how do you feel about her? Why is she such a big name?
I used to love her. I stopped liking her because I love Carol and I didn't like the way that their friendship broke up.
I see.
She's so big because she was not a stranger to reality TV. Uh-huh. She had been on reality shows before The Housewives. Uh-huh. She was actually on Martha Stewart Apprentice.
Oh, okay.
And then she was friends with Andy Cohen in real life. And the original, so originally when it wasn't going to be a franchise, Real Housewives of New York was the second iteration. It was going to be called Manhattan Moms.
Mm-hmm.
And it was all about mothers living on the Upper East Side. And then when Real Housewives of Orange County became a huge hit, they were like, let's brand this and just call it the Real Housewives of New York City and nobody will know. So then he was like, all right, so let's bring on my friend Bethany. She doesn't have kids, but she'll be good.
Right.
And she kind of was like the voice of the audience. Like she would like go to these ritzy parties and stuff and be like, this is ridiculous. Like these people are so, like they think who they are.
Right.
And so she was like a instant like hit with the fans. She became really big. Then she like invented Skinny Girl and she became like a huge multimillionaire.
Yeah.
And then she was on Shark Tank and like, so she's like a real business person now.
Okay.
She left the show. She had her own talk show. The talk show got canceled, and then she came back to the show for a few seasons, left again, and now there's talks that she might be coming back again. Mm-hmm. That's the other thing where it's kind of like people make, compare it to sports, and that there's not trading, but there are people who come and go. Mm-hmm. Like there are women who will be on for a couple seasons, leave, and then the audience will like get over whatever they're mad at them about, and then the audience will be like, bring them back, and then they'll bring them back.
Okay.
So anyway, so Bethany is a big name. She's probably the most successful of all of the housewives, uh-huh. like actually successful.
Who's the most villainous?
Across the friend, I have to be honest, I don't like Jersey. A lot of people love Jersey. I don't really watch Jersey. I find it triggering. Mm-hmm. It reminds me too much of like my upbringing.
Sure.
With all the Italian infighting. Yeah. God, that's a really good question. So the most hated, this is interesting. When Beverly Hills first started, they polled the audience and they found that Camille Grammer was the most hated housewife. Mm-hmm. That was Kelsey Grammer's ex-wife. Uh-huh. She was villainous. She was very like, I'm better than all of you because I'm rich, like that okay. kind of a person. And she didn't get along with the other women and the audience hated her, whatever. Once Kelsey, it turned out that Kelsey wanted her to do the show because he wanted her to be distracted so he could cheat on her.
Sure.
With another woman and leave her eventually, which he did. And then the audience felt softened to her. Okay. So the thing, the larger point that I'm getting to, and if you listen to Bitch Sesh, which is a podcast dedicated to the housewives, one of many, they'll say it too, like, there are seasons where some are villains and then the next season you love them and then the next season again, they go back like to being wrestling. Villains. Yeah, they, like they there is no one. And
edit somebody to be an underdog.
Every season, one of them is the villain of the season. Huh. And then it changes. So, so there is no one who's like really villainous. Although I guess Camille Grammer would be the one who was really hated, but a lot of people like her.
Let's talk about race and class.
Housewives. So glad you brought that up.
Because isn't Atlanta almost an entirely people of color cast?
Yes. So Atlanta was the third iteration. Mm-hmm. So it was Orange County, which the whole conceit of Orange County was they live in a gated community in Orange County, which is the wealthiest county in California.
Right.
Then it was New York City. Then it was Atlanta. And the concept for Atlanta was it'll just be wealth, but this time it's black wealth.
Right.
Because Atlanta has the highest concentration of black wealth in the nation. So there's only been one white housewife of Atlanta.
Okay.
And it was Kim Zolciak, who was on the first season and second season. I think she came back for a little while. And then the rest of them were black. And then since then, they've all been black. What's interesting is there was, for a long time, and now it's like looking back on it, it's like, wow, like we really weren't woke or like we never questioned this. The housewives were very segregated. Every other cast was all white and only Atlanta was all black.
Yeah.
In the last few years.
Well, you never had like a black person in
OC? And that's
OC?
The thing. Like it took literally this season is the first black housewife is on New York City.
What?
And it's like New York City was all white for 12 years.
Yeah, that sucked out.
Yeah, exactly.
So where they
now they're bringing in women
for different audiences.
Yeah. So the last couple of years, this is part of what I was saying before. A lot of people are turning a lot of more, I guess, more conservative people, whatever, are turning on Bravo because they think that the network is getting too woke because their thing lately has been introducing housewives of color into all of the franchises. So like the last slew of housewives have all been housewives of color. On the various cities, Beverly Hills, even Beverly Hills. It was like an actress, Garcelle Bouvet, who was in Coming to America. She used to be on NYPD Blue. Now she's on. And people they've been having conversations about race on The Housewives. And people are like, oh, I watch The Housewives to escape conversations about race. I don't want that to get into my trash escape. So it's a really interesting conversation because then there are other people who are like, yeah, but like this show reaches millions of people.
Yeah.
Like maybe millions of people could benefit from seeing a conversation about race among the housewives.
So how would you say politically the Bravo viewers come down?
So what's interesting is politically, I'd say that they probably lean left, especially now. I think that they maybe had a larger audience that leaned right, that is left. Uh-huh. But what's interesting is a lot of the women on the shows, it's never explicitly said, but a lot of them are like Republicans because they're like rich white women.
Right.
So it's an interesting dynamic.
Mm-hmm. Is there any part of it that feels like a freak show? Like we're just watching these crazy women and we're laughing from on high.
Sure. And I think that's what Gloria Steinem was just picking up on.
Yeah.
But the, I want to say yeah, but also no, because I feel like people genuinely love them. Mm-hmm. Like, even if they, like, they genuinely care for them, like, and like root for them and want to see them do well, you know, like, it's not like Bad Girls Club,
yeah,
where it's like you're only watching to see them fight,
right,
and scrap with each other. There's, but very, I feel like there's those very are huge rarely moments. But there's very rarely any physical fights on the Housewives, right. Ever. They're more, it's more like highbrow than that. They'll argue and stuff, but it's very rare that they'll get into fisticuffs like they do on like Bad Girls Club and stuff.
Right.
So it's different. It's not, you're not like looking down on them. In some ways it's aspirational because it's like, oh, these people are rich.
Yeah.
It's like Lifestyles of the Rich and the Famous.
Right. All right, let's discuss the rise of Andy Cohen.
Skywalker.
Because I don't watch, but I see him, but he like is Bravo. Like in my mind, he's the, yeah. He is Bravo, right?
Yes, he's like Bravo personified.
Was he always? What does he do besides host? Well, does he produce it all?
He actually has a background in news. So he worked at Good Morning America for a really long time.
Uh-huh.
He's a journal, like he started off as a journalist or like studying journalism and production. Mm-hmm. So he came in as, I think, head of programming, but now I'm pretty sure he's like, I don't know, he's not CEO, but he has like a title that's higher than that, I think.
Yeah.
But he, and this is one of the things Kathy Griffin has knocked him on, he gave himself a show.
Yeah.
So like nobody would ever put him on camera but himself.
Mm-hmm.
But now he's very famous. Right. But yeah, he's sort of, and he is the host of all of the reunions. So okay. Not just the Housewives, every show on Bravo that's successful has a reunion episode at the end. At least one. Sometimes it's two parts, three parts, where they just like go over the stuff of the season.
That's how they end.
And it's Andy Cohen hosts. He asks the questions. He asks audience questions. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, like sometimes the reunions are like the best part.
Okay. Yeah. Because you could restoke all that stuff.
Yeah. Absolutely. And it's interesting. One of the things that's interesting about the Housewives and Bravo shows in general is that they don't break the fourth wall.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't. The reunion gives them the opportunity to break the fourth wall. Mm. They're only allowed to break the fourth wall in the reunion.
Yeah.
So like they're never allowed to mention they don't say Real Housewives. They're not allowed to say anything about a show. They're not allowed to say anything about cameras. And if they do, it gets edited out. But then on the reunion, that'll be their time where they'll get to say like, well, what you didn't see was blah, 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 blah. And she texted me this and I have it on my phone. And like all that kind of stuff comes out.
Okay.
Which is juicy, and they call it like bringing the receipts.
I see. what are your feelings about him?
I'm very conflicted on him. I want to like him, and sometimes I do like him. I think that he had a genius idea. I think that I agree with him politically.
Yeah.
He's very political. What I don't like about him is going back to the race and class and sexism of it all. I do see the criticism of. Of course, this network, which is all for women and starring women, is helmed by a guy.
Right. Like you think that the person in charge of the Real Housewives would be a woman.
But would it be different if it were a woman instead of a gay man? Question has been asked about Sex and the City, too. Like Sex and the City has been accused when it went from being a women's writer's room to being like Michael Patrick King as the auteur. It was accused as leaning too much into camp.
Right.
It's similar in that way, and I think it would be different.
And that gets into questions of how much is camp exploitative.
Right.
You know, I've seen a lot of clips of, like, I don't have a lot of feelings about him, but I feel like I've seen a lot of clips of, like, him just seeming very nice and polite, but having created chaos.
Yes.
Like, I'm going to ask you something that's going to hurt a lot of people's feelings, but I'm going to ask it like,
and
it's
then
not
he'll be
deal.
Like, okay, well, best of luck with that, and then he'll move on to the
right. Also, I see
he'll be like, Whitney from Alabama says, why are you talking about her husband when your husband seems to not really love you,
right?
And then they'll get all emotional and he'll be like, yeah, that's tough, anyway, next question. He's a shit stirrer,
right? Doesn't he ask the real celebrities, the not Bravo celebrities, like, isn't there a segment on a show where he asks them something that they
plead
have to,
the fifth?
Right, and they have to answer gossipy questions.
What's good about
a lot of that will break through to the rest of media.
Yeah.
Like I remember, as not a Bravo fan, but as a Buffy fan, I remember it was news when Allison Hannigan, he got Allison Hannigan to say how unpleasant Sarah Michelle Gellar was on Buffy.
Right. Right.
And that was picked up other places.
Whenever there's a new guest on, he please plead the fifth, which is the rules are he asks them three questions and they're only allowed to plead the fifth to one of them. And then whichever one they plead the fifth to is like the shady one. So right. It'll be telling in itself because it'll be like, yeah. Allison Hannigan, what do you think about Sarah Michelle Gellar? And then she'll be like, I'm going to plead the fifth on that one. Right. And then it's like the audience goes like, ooh.
Right.
Because it's called the Bravo Clubhouse.
Right.
And it's all fans in the audience right. that are like, ooh, shady.
It's such a setup because you can only plead the fifth on one.
Right.
So you have to answer two questions.
Right. What's good about him is, in a way, he's kind of like... he reminds me of that character. Remember that character that Chris Farley played on SNL where he would interview people and be like, remember that time that you were in that thing? Wasn't that awesome?
Yeah.
He's like that. So like in a way, he's a good host because he has like these iconic people on and he asks questions that like the audience wants to ask, not necessarily related to their current project.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So like he had Cher on and he was like, he asked her a million questions about Moonstruck.
Yeah.
Because he's just a Moonstruck fan and he knows like that. The audience probably really likes that movie too. So like mm-hmm. he was like, I want you to slap me in the face and say snap out of it and I'll do the Nick Cage line. And she did it. And it's like fun stuff like that where it's like, and he'll do like, let's go to the vault and he'll bring out like clips from them from like old movies they were in. So like he'll ask like fanboy questions, which the audience loves
and thrives
off of. And that's like what he's known for. And I think like some celebrities have a hard time with that.
Mm.
And then others, though, have come to expect that that's what you're going to get when you go on the show.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's going to ask me about that, like, campy movie I did back in the 80s. Not necessarily just what I'm plugging right now.
Right.
And the fact that it's called a clubhouse and they drink throughout and there's a guest bartender every night and they do shots together and stuff. Like, it's very, like, fun 70s kind of. It's like the 70s, like, California cocktail party kind of a vibe.
Right. Like the old Playboy show or something.
Yes, exactly.
And
he's had some guests get mad at him.
Really?
Yeah, like on air. Like, did you see Titus from
Burgess? Yeah.
Titus Burgess like got nasty with him.
Yeah.
But I think he was right. Andy was wrong.
Right.
Because what do you think about the? Because Andy Cohen has for a long time. He'll never say it, but he even wrote about it in his book. He has a hard time forgiving Eddie Murphy for all the homophobia of his early stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so he writes this really powerful essay actually in his book where he said like he went to see what's that big movie that was his stand up that was big?
Either Delirious or Raw.
One of them. And he's like, I went to see it and it was all gay jokes. And I just remember all my friends hysterically laughing and I felt like dying inside.
Mm.
And so he's mentioned that before. It seems to be a pet thing of his. Right. So he had Titus on and Titus did something with Eddie Murphy and he was like, how do you as a gay man feel about working with Eddie Murphy who built his career on homophobic jokes? And then Titus was like, why are you trying to get me to say something about my boss on TV right now? Basically. Mm-hmm. And he was like, I'm not going to play that game. And it got awkward.
Uh-huh.
And there have been other instances where that's happened before. And then Titus was like, that was years ago. He's apologized. He's changed. He's moved on. So, he's a shit stirrer.
Titus, by the way, played a serious role in Respect, the Aretha Franklin movie.
I want to see that.
It was good. I mean, it's a biopic. It does everything a biopic does, but it was good. But he was interesting in it, not being, you know, the Titus-like persona.
Yeah.
Just being a very, like, mellow kind of character.
Yeah.
So where did, like... Where do you think the Bravo brand is going?
I don't know. I think it's like any empire's got to fall eventually.
Right.
Like WWE hit its peak and then fell. And it's like it's any...
Or makes a huge misstep. Have they made a huge misstep yet?
Well, some people think that they're making this huge misstep now with... I don't think so. But people have accused them of being like too woke or trying to be too... Like trying to... Like people have accused them of like trying to make the shows too political. I've heard that a lot and read that a lot from people. Mm-hmm. I don't necessarily agree with that. I think it's reflective of the time we're living in. And if it's supposed to be a reality show, they should be having these conversations because that's what we've all been talking about. Some people see that as a misstep. I don't know. I don't know how it's going to continue to get bigger and bigger until it's not. Right. And then it's going
to.
So I don't know. I don't know where it's going to go. But I don't think it's going to last forever.
Right.
It seems, in some ways, it seems like it's on its approaching its, I don't know if it's like jumping the shark or its end of days kind of Sort of, because like I know like one thing they're coming out with is like on Peacock they're doing like a Housewives All-Stars where like a bunch of Housewives from different seasons are together from different cities go on a vacation together. And like that's something that very early on he said he thought was cheesy, but now he's doing it. So there are some indications that maybe they're running out of steam a little bit.
My last question for you would be, how would you explain Bravo? Well, no, you've already done that. How? My last question for you would be, like, what's one thing about Bravo you would want someone who's not a fan of it to understand?
I think it would be, well, I feel like I'm not doing it justice just because there's so much of it. And, you know, it's like I haven't even talked about the fact that, like, there's way many, there's many, many shows in addition to, like, just The Housewives.
Right. When I think about, by the way, when I think about Bravo, in, like, 2002 or 2003, they did, like, a five-part, like, eight-hour TV documentary special called, like, The 100 Greatest Scares on, like, Halloween. And then they showed it a couple of Halloweens in a row. And it was just, like, talking heads and some were, like, celebrities, some are reality people, but some are like film scholars, and they all talk about like horror movies. It was like it is one of the better like deep dives on like horror cinema, and it was just a Bravo thing.
Yeah, well, they'll do stuff like that. I mean, there's to a certain extent they still have Bravo specials, and like they'll do stuff like that. I think what I would say is that you're not smarter than the network.
Uh-huh.
Like the network isn't as dumb. And maybe not that you're not smarter than the network, but like everybody's in on the joke.
Right.
Like even the people on the shows, like they know what this is. And like there is no pretense that this is all really real.
Right. Right.
They might say it is, but like, you know, the audience, they don't. That's maybe why they're so successful. I think they don't underestimate the intelligence of their audience.
Okay.
And the shows aren't as dumb as you think they are.
Right.
They're actually pretty smart. It's trash, not garbage. It's trash, not garbage. Yeah. And that it's just insanely fun and addictive. And that no matter what time of day when you put Bravo on, there's going to be some fun, campy thing on.
What's your Bravo consumption like?
Oh, boy. I watch a lot of it, man.
Every day? Hours a day?
I DVR mostly. Like, I'm not the type of person to have the TV on all the time. But I do watch nearly every franchise of The Housewives.
What?
And I watch a couple of other select shows on there too.
What about podcasts? The ancillary Bravo.
There are so many of them.
Right.
So my favorite podcast is Bitch Sesh, which is Casey Wilson and Danielle Schneider. And they just recap.
Does that come out once a week or multiple times a week?
It's been on for a while now. It used to be once a week. It's gotten really big. Like they did live shows. I went and saw them at a live show in New York, and Andy Cohen came to the show, and they bowed down to him and stuff. Now it's probably like biweekly. They don't publish it. They don't I don't know what release is often, but that's fun. And June Diane is always on that. She's almost like a third co-host, June Diane Raphael. So they're good. I like them. And then there's Watch What Crappens.
Okay.
Which is two like funny gay guys who just do, they recap. They just do every episode of every show. They release every day. It's like their full-time job. And they recap every episode. And their thing is they're impressionists. So they just do impressions of everyone. And it's hilarious. And then there are so many others. There are a lot of others, but those are the two big ones.
I wonder if like it would ever become like a streaming service, or like Real Housewives as a brand would become a streaming service.
They're doing some stuff on Peacock because NBC owns Bravo. Right. So like, for example, like Real Housewives of Miami was only on for three seasons. It always had low ratings, but the fans have wanted it back.
Yeah.
So now it's coming back, but only to Peacock where they know the fans will seek it.
Right.
We're living in kind of that time where like there's a lot of fan service because now you can, with all streaming services, like you can just like release something for a niche audience. I wonder. I mean, there's Bravo Radio with Andy on Sirius.
Oh, is it really?
Or I think it's, or maybe it's Andy Radio. Radio Andy. Yes. And it's all like this stuff.
Interesting.
So it's like a media empire.
Right.
It's huge.
But it's interesting because I guess other than maybe wrestling, there's not a lot of analogs to it because so much of it
the
is
the fact that
about,
it's different
like,
cities. People, a lot of people are like, it's gay sports because it's like you're rooting for your city. But, you know, that only goes so far. But I think wrestling is the best analog to it
because, again, a lot of that is also about because at the heart of it is this campy, constructed, but we all are in on it thing.
Right.
And then, but so much of like the other 90% of it is us talking about it.
Well, that's the thing. There's a communal aspect to it. It's like, it's just so fun because it's almost like they're your friends. So, because so many, every show, even like Shaws of Sunset, Vanderpump Rules, there are so many of them. And it's always just like about a cast of people and their relationship. So it's like, you feel like they're your friends. And then like you talk shit about your friends with your real friends.
Yeah, yeah.
So like I'll text, I mean, whenever there's a new thing on, like I have people that I text and like we text throughout. And then there's always the wave of gifts that come the next day from the episode. And those are really funny on like all the Bravo fan accounts and stuff. And it's like a whole thing.
Do you think that in some ways... this stuff has taken the place of what used to be narrative, like soap operas used to be this way.
I was just gonna say, so Andy Cohen has been he said that he's been accused, which, cause so growing up he loved soap operas, he was a huge soap opera fan.
Yeah.
And he says the ultimate irony is lots of people have said that he and his network have killed soap operas.
Yeah,
because it's just a cheaper way of making soap operas.
Right. And even though, you know, there's a constructed nature of it, it does have one foot planted in reality much more than a scripted soap opera would.
Right.
Huh.
I do think that it's killed soap operas. Yeah.
Because can you think about yourself getting as excited about a show, a soap opera that way, the way you would?
No.
You know?
But maybe back before this... Sure. I would have. I'm sure.
I mean, I think there's like been a Dynasty where they're like this bitchy rich women.
Well, that's what this all is. You know, it's all, again, it knows it's doing that.
And you brought up an interesting point, which like it was at least initially inspired by Desperate Housewives, which was a narrative.
And was kind of like a satire of soap operas in itself.
Right.
Yeah. But you're right. There's a communal aspect to it where it's like, and that's why it was called Watch What Happens. And that was like their slogan.
Right.
It's like, oh, you're not going to believe this shit. Like, and we'll all talk about it. You got to watch what happens. Right. So yeah, it's like, it knows that it has a very engaged audience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they work hard to keep that audience engaged.
So as a Bravo fan, would you say that there's production on top of consumption? Like, I know in the nerdy world of like cartoons and sci-fi, like there's like fanfic and shit, but like, In the world of Bravo, like there's podcasts.
Yeah.
Are there like Bravo tweeters or Bravo bloggers?
Yeah. Is there Bravo bloggers,
consumption?
There's all of that.
Production with the consumption.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, for sure. I follow like a million Instagram accounts that are all like constantly updating with like hot takes and, you know, whatever. People tweet about it. I mean, if you look on Twitter, whenever one of the shows, especially The Housewives, is on, it's always trending in the top 10 because people are tweeting about it as it's on. And that's like the fun of it.
Yeah.
It's like you wouldn't believe like what they're doing.
Right. Okay, final question.
Oh, and I do want to say what's also interesting about it is it's got longevity because they established really early on that they could shake up the cast whenever they want to.
Yeah.
So it's one of the only things I could think of where like you'll be like season 1 through 4 is great. Season 5 and 6 aren't. But then 7 through 12 are amazing. But then 13 is not. But then 14 is really good again. It's like almost like SNL.
Yeah.
Like
it gets good
and bad and it stays.
Right.
Because it never like other shows... they jump the shark and then they just get bad.
Right.
Because in this situation, if it gets bad, they're like, all right, well, then we'll just fire these three and bring in three new ones.
Right.
And then we'll shake it up.
Right. So the final question I want to ask you now is, what's like the greatest moment? What's the moment that you would say, oh, go on YouTube and find this moment because this is the most famous moment. This is what we all reference.
Oh my God. There are so many. I feel like the big winner in this category is Atlanta. I think Atlanta has a lot of those moments. Uh-huh. One of them is on one of the reunions, Phaedra, Phaedra Parks, like just read to filth Kenya Moore. Mm-hmm. And she does this monologue where she's like, you're worried about my husband. And then it's actually horrible is the thing. Right. She like attacks Kenya for wanting to do pregnancy by
surrogate
or artificial insemination.
Yeah.
And she's like, your baby's father might be a axe murderer, but all you'll know is that he needed $10 to buy himself a large pizza. So he jacked off in a cup. And it's so horrible and mean and cruel. And then Kenny just sits there quietly for it. And it's just so funny because they're all dressed up in ball gowns. And it's just like so campy.
Right.
And the, so that's but one of them. So but then bad. Atlanta it's has so, so many. It's so evil. Atlanta, a lot of the sounds on TikTok are from The Housewives.
Okay.
Like, you ever hear the sound where it's like, ooh, a white refrigerator. Girl, let's get you a home. That's
yeah,
from,
yeah.
That's from Atlanta. But there are a lot. Oh my God. There's one of them on New York City. One of the cast members was, she wore a prosthetic leg, and at a cocktail party, she got in a fight and she threw her leg across the room.
I feel like I saw that on like The Soup.
Yeah. That's a moment that people reference all the time. There are just so many iconic moments like that, that are just like so, so, so funny.
Okay.
Cause it's like what's funny about it is like, they're in on the joke, a lot of them, but then like, there are certain moments where just like, wow, these are just like the least self-aware women in the world. And that's what makes it really funny.
Mm.
I don't know. It's
complicated.
It is. It's complicated. And, you know, speaking of artifice, I made this point in conversation with somebody the other day. So we were talking about the pandemic and like what this pandemic has, how it's changed our lives. And a lot of the housewives and people on these reality shows on Bravo would say, like, you forget the cameras are there after a while and that our real self really does come through. And I always used to call bullshit on that and be like, you can never forget that there's a camera on you. Like, come on. But then when I taught a full year during the pandemic where I was always on Zoom, I really did forget that, like, I was on TV and, like, I was being projected into people's homes. So, like, I would, like, be myself and like make dumb jokes or whatever and be like stupid. And I'd really forget, like, these kids are watching me like on their computer and like their parents could be in the background. It's like, not that I was ever doing anything inappropriate, but you know what I mean? Like, just like letting my guard down and not thinking about the fact that I was being broadcast. Right. And anybody could be recording it or whatever. So in a way, I kind of was like, oh, I get what they mean when they say, like, after a while you do forget that you're being watched.
And I'm sure the crew is good at trying to disappear.
The editors are amazing, and the crew is, they've done like a few specials where like they've showed like how they're filmed, and the crew is so funny because it's like these crew guys with these big cameras, and they'll be like, it'll be like two women screaming at each other on the street, and they'll be like, they're fighting, go, and you'll see like these guys like running with their cameras to watch like these two women scream at each other in the middle of the street. Like, it's just like so funny because they treat it like, this is where the story is, let's go. Because they know, like, they need to capture these moments, because if something happens between the women and they have a fight and there's no footage of it, the fans get really pissed because they're like, well, where are the cameras? Because there's a really engaged audience, so like they want to be on top of everything. And then also, sometimes when you see behind the stuff scenes, you'll see how the producers like stir shit up.
Sure, yeah.
Like, there was, speaking of earlier, I said Denise Richards was a housewife.
Mm.
She was on and she like left a party early. And then you saw like on a behind the scenes thing, like you saw one of the producers like, Denise, like, all these women are talking about you and they're hurting your reputation. Are you going to let them get away with that? Or are you going to go back in there and tell them that you're Denise Richards and you're a celebrity and you're not going to stand for this? And she's like, you know what? You're right. And she went back in.
Oh,
and it's like, it's so clearly like gaslighting where they're like, you need to get back there because we want to make good TV. So it's really interesting. But that's why a lot of the housewives, this is the bad end of it, end up saying like, the show misrepresented me. The show manipulated me. It's not without its critics, even the people who are on the inside.
Okay.
That's really interesting.
Well, I feel like I've learned a lot.
I think you should watch. Just tune in.
What should I watch?
Beverly Hills is really good right now.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, it's wrapping up. And that's the other thing. It's always on. It's on a schedule so that there's always a new Housewives series airing throughout the whole year.
Okay.
Like soap operas, it's always on.
Right.
So like one city will wrap up and then the next city will just be starting.
Are there ever two on at the same time?
Yeah. Right now we're in a really great place because Beverly Hills is on, and Beverly Hills is really good this season, and Potomac is on.
Okay.
Potomac is another cast that's, I think, entirely women of color. And that's really good. Potomac is like the area by DC. When it first came on, I was like, where the hell is Potomac?
Yeah.
But it's like Virginia, Maryland border. Really interesting. And one of the housewives there like used to work in the Obama White House. Mm-hmm. It's interesting. They all have their things.
Right.
But anyway, those two are on and those are really good. I don't know. Start anywhere. I would start at the beginning of a season. I am a firm believer that you don't ever need to catch up.
Right.
As long as you're at the beginning of a season, you're fine.
Yeah. Okay.
you know, like even if it's season 15, like because it kind of is, it kind of restarts every season.
Right, right. All right. Well, you let me know.
I will.
The next time a season is beginning.
I will. And thank you for indulging me in this.
Thank you for educating me.
This is my passion.
I'm always.
This is my true passion.
I'm always interested in hearing people's passions, and learning about something in the media landscape that I am naive to.
Yeah.
All right. This is PCMC. Anthony, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
We end every episode by saying,
go bye-bye.